You are listening to the audio-only portion of the KoopaCast. To watch the video version, please check out purenintendo.com/KoopaCast. The intro and outro music of our KoopaCast is brought to you by the artist Big Giant Circles, who has composed for projects such as Mass Effect 2, Super Street Fighter 2 HD Remix, and Borderlands 2. Our opening song is Houston, and our closing song is A Rose in the Field, both from the album Glory Days. To listen to more of Big Giant Circles' work, go to music.biggiantcircles.com to see his entire collection of video game remixes and soundtracks. You can also find his collection on iTunes. Again, that website is music.biggiantcircles.com. Hey everyone, this is KoopaCast number 49. I am your host for this KoopaCast, Matthew Paxton, the multimedia manager over at PNM and PureNintendo.com, your independent source for all things Nintendo. As you can see, this is going to be a very, very intense one-on-one discussion with my other guest,
Justin Sharp, editor-in-chief of PNM.
And we will have one other person hopefully joining us sometime in the future. They're kind of indisposed at the moment. I would not give that detail because I think he might fire me if I told the public about that.
Yeah.
So the first item on our docket here is the new Zelda Warriors trailer, which is good for two things. We get a bunch of new information, and it only happened a couple days ago, so this KoopaCast is very relevant. Justin, I assume you did see the Hyrule Warriors trailer, right? The 30-minute video.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I guess, you know, I was kind of hoping maybe like for an online mode or something like that to get announced, but I liked the things that they did announce. The adventure mode was pretty cool. I like that they're using the 8-bit Legend of Zelda NES-style graphics for the map. And it looks like the map itself, at least for the ones that they had unlocked already, looks like it's the same map from the NES. And for those who don't know, the adventure mode was announced, and you kind of have the same map as Legend of Zelda on the NES, and you start off on that same bottom center area you did in the original Zelda game, but as it starts out with the 2D Zelda graphics, it transforms into the Hyrule Warriors graphics, and you have to play out a battle in that cell of that map. And then you unlock the different areas on the grid of the map, and you keep fighting through different corridors and things like that. But looked pretty cool.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It seems like there's like a lot of like little mini objectives going on. Like you have to like find certain items or certain keys, and you can use items to help out with that.
Yeah, and so, I really like the co-op mode, and I know they've talked about it before, but I like that they showed a little more detail of that.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, couch co-op. One person's got a Wiimote. It's got a separate screen as somebody who's being broadcast on the television. So everyone gets a full view of the action, which is very good because the Warriors series can get very chaotic at times.
Yes.
And when I reviewed it using the smaller TVs, there were where I was like, I had no idea what was going on. Like bodies were just flying everywhere. People were screaming. I didn't know if it was my guys that were screaming. And actually, I think the person who was unlucky enough to like have to look at the Wii screen might experience that a little bit, so
yeah.
I think being second player will be very good this time, so you know, people call dibs on second player this time around.
Yep.
And you know, they revealed of course Ganon. Did they say he was Ganon or Ganondorf?
I think Ganondorf. He transforms into Ganon in one of his little what do they call it? The final moves or something like that.
Yeah, like the final special attack.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called either.
In the Warrior series, it's called Puso, I think.
Yeah, it's where they charge up their magic meter and release it.
Which, that was actually another interesting element, the magic. In the Warriors game, the Warriors Orochi 3 Hyper that I reviewed, you had like one gauge. You had this Musou gauge, and it was split into like multiple parts. So like, you can hit like the right trigger, and like you do like one special attack, or you'd like hit the A button and you do like an even stronger special attack. And for some characters, it would be one giant attack, and for other characters, it would be like you're supercharged for a while and you're doing these special attacks for like a limited period of time.
Right.
So what we're seeing here is like it's a little bit more different, which is great because not only do you have the big special attacks, but you also have like the supercharge to where like all your attacks are stronger, and that looks like it applies to all characters, which was definitely like a good interesting aspect that hopefully they'll bring to the Warrior series.
And I do like the weapon progression or even the character progression. You can level up your characters as you go, but then you can also have different like skills for each weapons. So you can pick up weapons in battle. It may have a certain skill on it that increases your attack power, but then another weapon you pick up may have a different skill on it. And they talked about fusing, that you could fuse like multiple skills to make an even powerful weapon. But
That
that
was item management in the Warrior series. Like you just kind of fused weapons together, and that, well, that also helped like control, like keep your inventory down because you pick up weapons like, well, like it's like litter on the ground. They're like they're everywhere, and you will soon find yourself like oversaturated. You'll get like four swords and have to like root through all the swords to like discard some here and there.
Yeah, that's kind of like I've been playing Darksiders 2 again recently on the weekend, and it's kind of like that. You get the different drops from the enemies, and I like it at least in that you can just walk over an item, and it kind of shows you this little hover display that says green increased by green 10% or something like that. Or it'll show in red if it's actually less powerful than the current item you have. And you can either pick it up, or if you hold the minus button, it'll equip it immediately. And I thought that that was really cool. You could just like, oh, well, this is green. It's going to increase my defense by 15%. Might as well just hold the minus button and equip it right there. And then you could always just sell the other one later on in the shop or something.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's the good thing about the fusion system in Warriors is, you're probably not gonna see like the green and red stuff, but you will see like if your sword has like let's say, well, like in the other series, like there was an element called blast, which would like create like a bigger splash damage for your weapons, right? Like if you had like a +3 blast, and then you had another weapon for your guy that also had a +3 blast, when you fuse them, you get +6.
So
And then you can
potentially, you could
also
have ones that have different abilities, but then you could like further strengthen a single ability if you fuse two of the same.
right, and that went all the way up to level 9 for each skill.
Interesting.
And you also had 8 skills. I don't know if we're gonna get that with Warriors. It kind of looked like there was gonna be like maybe only 4 skills you can put on a weapon, and that's totally fine with me. Because I think that would like put more strategy in there. Like, oh well, I'll be riding horses a lot, so I need a weapon that's good for riding on horseback, or this weapon stun locks me, so I need something to freeze him.
Right. Now, since you've played, some of the older Warriors games, what's the length of the single player or the story in those games usually?
So many hours. So many. Each battle is, each battle is going to average you around 30 minutes. Some are a little bit shorter, but a lot of them are going to be longer. Especially when you have to like travel back and forth across the map. They haven't shown off. I mean, like when if anybody's watched the Nintendo Treehouse that they had at E3. When they were demoing Hyrule Warriors in the Twilight Realm, You did see that one of the guys up there, Dan, I can't remember his last name, but he was playing as Midna, and at one point he did have to like trek all the way across the map to go accomplish a certain objective.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that the Warrior series is really bad at, because they make these broad, expensive maps, and you know they're pretty to look at, and you know there's some variety in the terrain, so it really feels like you're in the world. But when like the objective is like 5 minutes away on foot, or like 2 minutes away on a horse, then it really like starts to suffer, and you're like, ugh, you know, I have to slog through here and to break through these enemies, and you know, that's like, I think that's like one of their biggest weaknesses right there.
Right. It's like retreading and, you know, Metroid or Castlevania game, but on steroids. Going across a whole field or something.
Yeah, because I wouldn't say it's not like, well, maybe Zelda Warriors will be more like the Metroid style, because you have to go get an item and then you can access new places from there.
Right. That's an incentive to do it.
Yeah, but the Warrior series didn't have that. Like, you were able to access the entirety of the map from the get-go in like 99% of the cases. Like the other one, or yeah, sorry, 98%, the other 2% being like two stages where like there's a labyrinth that shifts, or like fires are set here or there and then extinguished in other places.
So what did you think of the Ganondorf reveal?
I thought it was great. I think the hair was kind of wild, but I guess that's just to kind of make him closer to Demise from Skyward Sword.
Yeah, it was very, very Demise-like.
But I think I'm definitely, since I'm a Club Nintendo member, I'm going to pick up the King of Demons costume pack, so I can put him in his Twilight Princess outfit.
Yeah.
Which I think that was like the best-looking Ganondorf out of like the series so far.
Yeah, the Ocarina of Time one was okay, like, but I felt like his nose was very massive, you know, exaggerated. Yeah,
that's what I thought. Like, that's the first thing I thought when I saw him when I was a kid. I was like, that nose is just like, because it's like a foot long, like out like this.
Yeah, yeah. He looked like I don't know. Have you ever seen Maximum Overdrive? It's this old 80s cheesy movie. Some people may know it. It's where these 18-wheelers come to life because this comet goes over. Well, there's this 18-wheeler that has this clown face on it, and it has, like, this crazy nose on it. I always equated Ganondorf with that clown guy just freaking out. But...
Nice.
Yeah, the Twilight Princess design I really liked, and the Wind Waker design I actually really liked.
Great to see in the...
I liked his beard and just the... He had a very imposing figure, you know. I guess kind of like the forehead just kind of came and sloped down to the nose, whereas, you know, Ocarina of Time was a very, you know, pointed out, you know, clown nose. But
right.
Twilight Princess is a good in between, I think.
Yeah. Actually, I think Wind Waker Ganondorf might not be the best fit. Uh-huh. Simply because I felt like that was like the most relaxed Ganondorf out of all of them.
Yeah.
What they showed in Twilight Princess is like, you know, or not Twilight Princess, sorry. What they showed in the Hyrule Warriors was like a very intimidating Ganondorf. Like, he was laughing, he was very maniacal, he had a huge presence about him.
Mm-hmm.
When Wind Waker Ganondorf was very like calm and kind of collective, and it's like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm trying to explain the character progression of Ganondorf here. I'm failing to come up with phrases here.
Yeah, no, I think maybe Wind Waker in general, just the game itself, doesn't fit with maybe what they're trying to do with Hyrule Warriors. Because you see, they're really drawing from three games for Hyrule Warriors. Ocarina of Time, Twilight Princess, and Skyward Sword. Those are kind of the main Zelda games they're at least bringing characters from, but even the locations are inspired from more from those than the others.
Right.
Which makes sense. Those are the only three Zeldas who have had, you know, more of the realistic style that Hyrule Warriors is going for. So.
Right. And of course, Majora's Mask is making an appearance here and there.
Yes. And that's cool. I kind of hope there's going to be some sort of, like, I don't know, maybe a Termina field, you know, unlockable area or something. I mean, Nintendo teases this all the time with Majora's Mask stuff, so. I'm sure they'll troll us more and more.
Oh yeah. On that topic, I hope for two things then for Majora's Mask. I hope Link gets like a fierce deity alternate.
Ooh, yeah.
And then also that we see like Skull Kid wearing the mask.
Yes, that would be cool. Skull Kid, man, playable Skull Kid would be really cool. Oh, one of the other things I was thinking, they talked about the DLC, the different skins you can download for like Ganondorf. I think they had Link and Zelda, like their Skyward Sword skins and Ocarina of Time. And they mentioned, didn't they mention like retailer specific DLC or something like that?
Yeah, they are going to have retailer specific DLC. They haven't announced any details yet. They just put in the video. Be sure to check out your retailers to see which DLC. So
And
they.
I'm always a little wary with that because, if there's, like let's say you buy it on Amazon or something, you may get that DLC. I really hope it's not like exclusive. Like, let's say you buy the game from Amazon, it would be nice if all of the DLC was downloadable through the eShop, so hopefully they're doing something like that, because I would hate it if you're like, oh, I did the Club Nintendo one, but I can't get the other ones because I didn't buy it from GameStop.
Yeah, I don't mind so much with this what they're doing now with the costumes, simply because they're not like affecting the gameplay in any fundamental way. And if you don't get it, you're not losing out on a large chunk of gameplay. You're just losing out on like a costume.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because in some cases, I think it was like Far Cry, maybe Far Cry 3 or maybe Far Cry 4. The last couple of them have had like exclusive like co-op missions you could download if you bought from GameStop versus Amazon, and that always kind of irked me because it's like, okay, so there's three free new missions. Some of them are even like single player missions. That was a little bigger deal, but yeah, the skins, it's not really adding new gameplay or new levels or things like that.
Right. And thankfully, it seems like the game industry has kind of cooled off on, having DLC, gameplay DLC in very specific conditions. So it seems like they've kind of learned their lesson from backlashes against that. So I don't see Nintendo kind of pulling that trick anytime soon. Especially because they seem to offer, like, if it's DLC, like, half the time it's free anyway, which is, an interesting move on their part.
Yeah, and speaking of DLC, I know we got a couple other topics to get to, but they mentioned the Mario Kart update today in a press release. And again, it kind of speaks to what you're talking about, the DLC. Nintendo has kind of been opting for free in a lot of cases for these updates. And I think it's cool with the new Mario Kart update, you get those three Mercedes cars or whatever that came out in Japan. But then they're also updating the game to finally add a map display on the TV, which I think is awesome. And then they're also improving a couple other things, the order of some of the menus, like it'll do next race instead of highlight reel as the first menu when you finish a race. And then a couple other big things.
Yeah, I thought it was definitely interesting when I first heard the Mercedes DLC. I was definitely thinking, okay, please don't let this be paid. Please don't let this be paid. And you're like, I'm like, what are they doing with this? But I mean, it sounds like it's free. Nintendo had like a sponsorship deal with Mercedes. That's what I heard. So I mean, it seems like it seems to be going well. They don't seem to be like shoving Mercedes down your throat. But right now, we don't know what's gonna happen when the downloads go through and everybody's like got highlight reels with Mercedes in there, or like there's like always a Mercedes symbol as a watermark or something like that. Yeah, hopefully they don't do anything crazy like that, but gotta be wary here. So you're gonna be getting like, are you gonna be looking for those Mercedes? Or actually, before I get to that. Like, I haven't seen all the details. Is it you get the Mercedes right then and there, or is it like you have to go find it and unlock it after you get the update?
I think you can just download them and they're automatically, you don't have to unlock them or anything. So I think once you download the update, you just have those three cards available, is what I understood.
Oh, all right. Well, that's pretty good. I like the drag racer that they have in there.
Yeah,
That
and
1925 Mercedes.
yeah, kind of the retro one. Yeah, I like that retro style. It actually is very similar. I use the is it the Mach 8 car in the Mario Kart 8? Kind of has that, slender body. The wheels kind of looks like a soapbox racer or something.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of like one of the Mercedes cars that they have in there.
Right. And yeah, because I think Mario Kart for the Wii had a very similar model as well.
Yeah, and I like that style. It's just kind of a sleek, almost looks like kind of the old formula cars that they used to have.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, because I remember the only car we knew of at first was that newer one, that GLA or whatever. That I was like, that's okay. But when they showed off some of these retro ones, I was like, that's cool.
Exactly. And
Yeah, one's from the 30s, the Silver Arrow, and then the SL Road, and then the new GLA or whatever.
yeah, but I wonder what they're gonna how they're gonna handle too, if they're gonna have their own special handling that's kind of like maybe emulates the handling of their real world counterparts.
Yeah, like they have some unique stats that are specific to how the cars would handle in real life. Add a little racing sim into Mario Kart.
Oh yeah. It sounds like a good video idea. We'll see how fast it goes round our track.
Yeah. I like it. I like it. Let's do it.
Awesome. And now we hand it over to the hands of our tame racing driver. Some say no. Just a real quick thing before we I get off subject here. I have the list of updates that came with the Mercedes-Benz.
Ooh, yeah.
Drivers will now have the option to display the course map on the TV screen during races.
That's huge. I know that was a huge request from a lot of people.
Or the order of the menu after each race will be changed to next race, followed by watch highlight reel.
I think that's good. I always did the highlight reel when I kind of just want to go to the next race.
The game will remember the most recent kart options that were selected, even if the Wii U system was powered down.
Also good.
Users will be able to change options of other players' Mario Kart TV download highlight reels, such as changing the focus to different characters or actions.
That's pretty
So,
cool.
yeah, I like that. There's more customization with your highlight reels.
Yeah.
A score screen will be added so players can see how many coins they've collected, the win-loss record of their online battles, and their frequently used characters.
I think that's really cool, like almost like a brag section, like, oh, cool, look at all the coins I've collected, or how many miles I've driven in Mario Kart, or
Man, look at all those losing streaks I have there.
Yeah.
And then finally, the update you have to have in every update improved the stability. Oh no, wait, this is a different one. Sorry, improved the stability of the online connection to enhance user experience during online battles.
Yeah, it's interesting it mentions battles specifically. I wonder if there's any other, effects that, might improve the online for the racing, which has been really fine for me. I haven't noticed any issues with it really, like lag or anything like that. So.
How many people can you have it like in a battle?
I think you can have the same amount. So I think you can have up to 12. So you can have 6 on 6 in a battle.
Okay, well that's interesting then, because I mean the battle track is the exact same as the racetrack, right?
Yes. Yeah, for the most part. I'm trying to remember. I did play the Toad. What's the new Toad level? Like next to the beach, and there's a lighthouse and trolleys and stuff. I forget what it's called. But the new Toad one, yeah, I play Battle on there, and I think it's the entire level. You can just cruise around. I was thinking there were certain ones that were just segments of the levels, but now that I think about it, I think it is just the whole level. Which I know a lot of people are probably hoping Nintendo does an update to the battle mode specifically to add like actual battle arenas, because I think that's probably been the biggest negative that people mention in Mario Kart 8 reviews is the battle is, you know, not as fun as like even the 64 one, like on Block City or whatever. So
it was definitely a very peculiar move for them to just all of a sudden use like the racetracks that were already there to do the battles, because they're so, well, I mean, they're not linear specifically because they go around circles, but you know, you're on a narrow track and it could be like minutes before you run into somebody again.
Yeah, I feel like some of the strategy goes away, you know, whereas like Block City, I felt like it was a lot more fun and, you know, it was almost like a, you know, like an arena shooter, like a Quake or something like that with Mario Karts. You know, you're kind of like, you know, hiding around a corner. You could hop around to, you know, dodge things, shoot your shells off. I mean, I thought it was great. And then, you know, just having the multiple layers added something too. You know, having just the same flat track cruising around, it's, you know, granted in some of the levels you can get up, like in the Toad level, you can get up on a, you know, higher little spot there, but it's not quite the same.
Right.
Maybe we're just too nostalgic. I don't know.
No, I think this one comes down to game design.
Yeah.
Because I know it can't be because they're like, you can put only like so many people, like how many people in a race? Like 12, right?
Yeah.
And they were able to put 12 in a battle in the previous title, so I don't understand what the problem is here.
Yeah, and the map not being on the TV screen, or at least an option at launch, was that was just kind of strange to me. Because to be honest, it's really hard to look at the map on the gamepad and still race effectively, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's like, I mean, you're barely glancing down, you know? Where I felt like, what was it, the map on the 3DS or the DS versions where it showed, you know, kind of people coming up on you, that was more effective because the screens were a lot closer. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're holding the gamepad up here, then, yeah, you may get some peripheral vision. You may be able to see the, you know, the map. But, yeah, definitely glad they're adding that to TV now.
Oh, absolutely. And, unfortunately, I don't have a good segue between Mario Kart and the next item.
Yeah.
You know, if you have to look on our site, you saw a big piece of news. Dan Adelman, head of the Digital Content Development Division at Nintendo, has decided to leave and form his own indie studio.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely kind of like, you know, shocking news, I guess, because, you know, there doesn't seem to be any indication that this is going to happen. But, you know, it sounds like he left, you know, on good terms with Nintendo. He seems confident that Nintendo has a handle on their indie program at this point. I was reading up on his blog when I saw the news, and he said, like, he feels like that was one of his reasons for leaving, is he felt far more confident leaving it in their hands than ever before. Like, he feels like he had to fight fewer battles, I believe is what he said.
Nice. Yeah, and I think it's a good move, and we saw Dan at E3. I mean, we talked to him there for a little bit while we were watching the I think it was when we were watching the Treehouse a little bit before our Nintendo tour. So that was cool. It was cool just to talk to him for a little bit there. But at PAX last year, at PAX Prime, we got to talk to him quite a bit on the show floor, and you know, kind of get his thoughts on the gaming industry, Nintendo, and he asked our feedback on, you know, how we thought Nintendo was doing with getting indie developers, or, you know, I think probably the thing we were more concerned about at that time, and well, even now, was third-party support versus indie support, you know, because indie support's been pretty strong for the Wii U since launch, and, you know, I think Nintendo made a lot of strides with indie support, you know, well before Microsoft and Sony, you know, started their whole campaigns leading up to the Xbox One and PS4 launch. So I think we were more talking to him about third-party stuff at the time, but I was surprised a little bit, but it sort of makes sense. He really has a passion for indie developers. And last year at PAX, we worked with the guys at Pony Studios who did Cloudberry Kingdom, which is awesome. And, I remember just talking to them. They loved Dan. They're like, man, Dan, was the guy who helped us, get where we are today. He helped us get the deal with Ubisoft to, for publishing our game and, helped us, publish it on the Wii U and stuff like that. So I feel like Dan, he always went down to the indie booth. They have a little indie section there at PAX. And he's like, hey, you guys should go check out this indie game and, talk about it in the magazine. And so it seemed like that was really where his passion lies. So sounds like, like you said, it was a good time to leave Nintendo. That, he felt like it was in good hands now, and maybe he could do more good in the indie scene now.
And I believe also looking at his blog, he will do some like consultation here and there and kind of help other like up and coming indie studios along the way kind of like figure out what they need to do to get published. But it won't be just exclusive to Nintendo. It'll also be for like Sony and Microsoft and finding other deals. And so it sounds like he's still going to be doing the same things he was doing then, just kind of like, but now he's on his own.
Yeah, so I wish him all the best. We're going to be talking with him here soon, or with an interview possibly soon.
Possibly soon.
We'll
So
get
there
his
you go.
thoughts.
Yeah, I'd like that. I just kind of like went off on a random thought there and like, oh, that's not good for the podcast. So, but didn't we also talk to Dan during the round table at E3?
Yeah, a little bit. Well, we did talk to Mark Franklin. We sat next to him,
Oh yeah, that's right.
because we did the interview with him earlier in the day. So he was really fun to talk to. He's a guy to hang out with. So
Yeah,
I think we traded Nintendo Network ID. So he said one of his favorite games was Mario Kart. So he's
that's right. Oh,
I'm pretty.
I gotta put his Nintendo ID into my Wii U. Gotta remember. I keep forgetting that we're not the only ones with Nintendo Network IDs on our business cards.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah.
Also remember that treehouse, like, just a flurry of work being done. So I guess Kaylin went to go shake somebody's hand, like she was right in front of me, and everyone was moving around. I'm like, oh, okay, this is a meet and greet. That's fine. And I go shake the hand. And I'm like, hey, I guess we're shaking hands with everybody. And I'm like, before I like, who are you? And I looked down, his name tag was like Bill Trennan. And I'm like, oh, hey.
Hey, I know you.
And then I'm like, so what are we supposed to talk? And then I look back as I'm saying that, I'm like, what are we going to talk about? And then you and Kaylin are gone. And I'm like, oh. Well, this is an awkward situation here. It's like, I guess I'll see you later. And I just walked away.
Bye, Bill. We'll see you later. We'll see him next year.
Yeah, I definitely hope so. And then moving away from Edelman and other celebrities. We're just talk a little bit about Nintendo's new virtual console campaign. Where they're going to release a new Mega Man every Thursday this month, and they start with Battle Network, and they're going to do Mega Man 4, 5, and they're going to do X3 as well, which is great because I believe X3 never made it to the virtual console on the Wii, correct?
Yes, I believe that's correct. And that was one that I was waiting for. I really like the X series. I'm sure probably a lot of people who are, I'm using the word casual kind of flippantly, but who are more casual with Mega Man games like the X games or the Zero games a little bit better than, necessarily the old school NES games or even Mega Man 9 and 10, but.
Well, I mean, Mega Man 9 and 10 sold pretty well when they went out on
That's true. So they did have quite a big market for that. And I liked them. I like the 8-bit style too. I mean, it's always a fun challenge platformer. So.
Oh, definitely. Do you think X4 and onward is going to be on there? Because that's when they made the switch over to PlayStation.
Yeah, X4 was on PS1, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I guess never say never, but they would have to have a pretty close relationship for Capcom to support that, I think, to the Virtual Console. But
I can't figure out Nintendo's relationship with Capcom at this point.
yeah.
Sorry to cut off on the side, but you said that, and they're like, you're like, good relationship with Capcom. I'm like, well, we should have a good relationship with Capcom. But then I think Resident Evil re-release, and I go, do we?
Yeah. It's like, yeah, Nintendo Capcom, they're buddy buddy. They've got Pac-Man. They've got all this other stuff they're doing.
Yeah, we put Pac-Man in there. We put Mega Man in there.
Yeah. But then we don't really care about releasing Resident Evil on there.
Yeah, no. Even though that the original remake of Resident Evil was a GameCube title.
Yeah. And was really, really well received. And it was awesome. I love that remake. So now
I
it's a
think.
re-remaster,
Yeah,
re-HD.
remaster, which it's an HD remaster, and so far I think that's it. It's just the graphics are updated, and I believe they're doing moving screens now instead of the static screen from traditional Resident Evil.
Oh, interesting.
Which I don't agree with moving screen. I've seen I saw a game called Blue Stinger that came out for the Dreamcast. And there are two versions. There's the American version with that has the moving screen, and the Japanese version, which has the static screen, more like Resident Evil style.
Yeah, I kind of like the static screen for the parts that they used it in the first Resident Evil. I thought it kind of added to the intensity, like if you're like into a corner and there's some giant spider, in the mansion, and you're kind of backing up, and you just have this one fixed angle to look at from. So
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
it
back
kind of
then it was probably like, that's a limitation of the hardware, the PlayStation hardware. But that's kind of what made it its charm.
Yeah, I thought it added to the sense of peril. And I think the sense of peril in new survival horror games, that's kind of a generous title for newer titles in the genre. But some of those older Resident Evils, and even Resident Evil 4, really emphasized that sense of peril really well. Like, you never really felt safe, or like in Resident Evil 4, if you heard that chainsaw going, I mean, it didn't matter where you were in the city or in the little town or wherever the chainsaw was. As soon as you heard just the faintest sound of that, you're like doing 360, like trying to figure out where it's coming from. And I mean that sort of stuff makes games scary fun. And I haven't really noticed that in newer Resident Evil was there.
Yeah, well, 'cause yeah, it's become more a little more action oriented. But I think maybe survival horror will be it's starting to come back a little bit. We saw titles like Outlast. Sorry, I'm just trying to think. Well, those like Outlast, Dread Out. Slender Man is the one that kind of kicked off the new revival of survival horror.
Not sure if Last of Us would be considered survival horror, I guess, but
It's more, yeah, it's survival action. I mean, there's that survival element, which is probably the most important aspect. I think even more important than horror is the survival aspect.
right. The sense that I may not survive the next 2 minutes here.
Right. And so, hopefully, the major publishers will like we'll see this trend and start maybe like tailoring, new titles towards that, like maybe some new IP towards like survival horror. Oh no, what's that? Fatal Frame. Fatal Frame, that's what's
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, coming up with you. Yeah, the new one.
right in Japan, and we're not quite sure if it's coming out in North America right now, correct?
Correct. Yeah, it may be someone may have to do an operation frame fall or something
Oh, I see what you're going there.
like
Nice.
that. Yeah, operation rainfall, frame fall, something like that.
Frame, fatal, fall.
Yeah.
There you
fatal
go.
Fall. Fatal fall. There you go.
Fatal. No, I don't know if we should call it fatal fall.
I like it. I like it.
But if it fails, then all the game journalist websites will have a nifty title already for them.
Yes. Yes.
I guess again, not too good at the segues today.
No, that's fine.
But we're gonna go ahead and move on to Nintendo's new trademarks. They filed three trademarks for their quality of life initiative that we heard earlier in the year. They've gotten one is for providing games via communication by a handheld game apparatus with a liquid crystal display. Controllers and joysticks for consumer video game apparatus, and then electronic circuits, optical discs, ROM cards, cartridges, CD-ROMs, memory cards, storing programs for consumer video game apparatus. So it definitely sounds like they're going for a whole, you know, it sounds like they're going to invest a lot of money into something completely different. Right now, we're not even sure if it's going to work with the Wii U or the 3DS, which, you know, I assume it will. Because that seems to be the direction that Nintendo wants to go, especially with all the recent interviews with, like, Miyamoto, where he's talking about communication between the 3DS and the Wii U. So, you know, I don't think it would be a smart move for Nintendo to make this new system for their new quality of life system and not have it communicate with the Wii U or the 3DS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it kind of reminds me, do you remember at one point Nintendo had like that three pillar strategy? Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember that.
Let me look it up. Yeah, Nintendo announced that they had a three pillar strategy, and I believe at the time they kind of abandoned it soon after that, but I think it was when they announced the DS, if I'm not mistaken. So they still had the Game Boy, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Game Boy was still doing really well, and then they had the GameCube at the time. So this was still before the Wii, but their third pillar was the DS. So it was this whole new platform, and then obviously, you know, hindsight's 2020, they completely got rid of the Game Boy line. The DS kind of, you know, succeeded the Game Boy as Nintendo's preferred handheld platform. And they kind of went back to a two-pillar approach, one console, one handheld. So it'll be interesting if Nintendo tries to go back to that. You know, if it is like a third pillar, is it a, you know, completely separate platform? And, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that the quality of life platform won't be compatible with the 3DS or Wii U, because the DS was. The DS was compatible with the Game Boy Advance cartridges. So I could still see them doing maybe like a separate platform. Maybe it's a wearable thing that incorporates Wii Fit U, maybe some NFC stuff. Maybe it connects to Wii U, 3DS. I don't know, whatever they want to do. But you know, you've got to think it has some sort of connectivity with existing products, or, you know, because that just makes sense to me. It's like, hey, if I, you know, if a person buys this hardware and we want them to buy this hardware, they've got to be able to talk to each other. You know, it just seems to make sense to me. But,
yeah, well, definitely. How much do you think they should, like, Nintendo should be going for this quality of life? Do you think? I mean, obviously it's very early on, but do you think they're already kind of like going too far with it? Do you think they should like kind of, you know, focus more on the games part of their business?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it definitely seems kind of premature almost. Like you hear them talking about this whole quality of life platform. It's like, oh, are they, you know, coming out with a new system? The Wii U is still kind of, you know, just in its infancy still, even in its second year now, but, you know, they're like, shouldn't they focus on that rather than developing this other thing? It depends on how it's marketed. I mean, if it's something completely different, if it's, you know, one of the things that's going to be a big initiative soon is kind of the wearable tech. That's kind of like a buzzword now in technology. You have all these smart watches and Apple's supposedly making their own smartwatch, and then you've got, I think Apple's also developing like these health-based apps. So you can kind of see technology is, you have all these sensors built into your phone and things like that to monitor, how many steps you take, things like that. So I could see a quality of life thing maybe, trying to go after that market to really hit a broader market. Maybe Nintendo thinks the quality of life market is more like the Wii market was, where it's the super casual, hey, I want to be able to listen to music while I'm jogging and have it keep track of my steps. Maybe Nintendo's going after those people. I don't know. But it seems like if they are going to have a third pillar, it's going to have to be a market that's not one they're currently going after.
Right. And what it makes me think, like, that seems like a market that doesn't exist right now that they should go after. Like, I can't find that market. Like, there's games and then there's like these apps that like keep track of your health stats. Like, I have a couple of those on my phone right now, and that's what I use. So I can't imagine buying a whole other platform for this.
Yeah. So it, yeah, you got to wonder like what exactly is it? Is it supposed to be? Because most people like combining devices. I've got a phone that does everything, They would rather buy one phone that can do 15 things than have three devices that do five things each,
Right.
So the value proposition will have to be there to, I already carry on my phone. I've got a 3DS. Now you want me to carry around something on my hand or, So it'll be interesting to see what they do.
I think it'll be interesting to see what is going to happen in the US as opposed to what's going to happen in Japan when they sell this.
Yeah.
Because when I'm talking about all this stuff, I'm just thinking about the US market. Could be a completely different situation in Japan. I gotta say, I am absolutely no expert on what's going on out over there right now. I just hear weather stuff here and there. So I definitely don't know the smartphone market over there. I know that phones are a big thing in Japan, and mobile gaming is a huge thing in Japan. But I don't know, how much that's tied to like their exercise habits over there. So that's something that's lacking in Japan that Nintendo just kind of found and decided to hone in on.
And maybe we're thinking about it all wrong. I mean, we're thinking of quality of life, so we're, thinking of exercise apps, health apps, stuff like that. It could be something different. Maybe their quality of life is entertainment and it's some other entertainment thing. I don't know, but just based off what we know of it so far, it does seem like it's something at least, different than gaming or, I don't know, something traditional of what we would think of.
It could be something for the mind too. We know Nintendo has, come out with a lot of like brain age games. There's Art Academy, Flipnote, to a lesser extent, I guess. There was also that, for a limited time, there was that Tour of the Loop that Miyamoto helped design, and I don't know if it's still there now, but for that period of time, there were like the Loop owned by like a whole bunch of like 3DSs that they own specifically for that program. So sorry, what were you gonna say?
Well, yeah, I think something like that, might get the quality of life, fitting that that phrase, because I think Nintendo might think that that's increasing people's quality of life. Oh, they can experience these museums, from the comfort of their home, or they could enhance their brain, exercise their brain every day, and that will increase their quality of life. It's interesting. It just, wondering how they're going to do that. Is it going to be some sort of wearable device that they take with them that's going to quiz them all the time on brain age stuff? Or, it's going to be interesting. I hadn't thought of the brain age aspect of it. That's a good point. Could be more of those puzzle games, things like that. Nintendo always has some fun puzzle games they come out with, Pushmo and Crashmo being some of the more recent ones, but
yeah. And I think gamification is starting to come back a little bit. Not nearly as much as survival horror or anything like that, but mm-hmm. I've definitely heard the phrase a little bit more than I have in previous years. Especially among indie developers, they're starting to come out with some things here and there. Mm-hmm. I heard there was actually like a school that uses gamification, not exclusively, but like primarily, I guess. And they'll use different games to kind of help teach kids different concepts. So, hopefully Nintendo, or maybe we'll see Nintendo go that route as well.
Yeah. And I think that would, it could be really cool depending on how it's done, but gamification could be kind of that, maybe the central pillar of this quality of life platform.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of interesting, now it's kind of making me think of, have you ever used the Duolingo app where you can learn another language? It's a free app. It's kind of like Rosetta Stone. But the thing that's interesting, they do kind of like these achievements and kind of, gamify it. So learning a language is more like, hey, awesome, you got points for, doing this quiz and, knowing all the vocabulary, or, you leveled up, or, stuff like that. So, I think that could be pretty cool. Let's say they, give you access to learning languages, on the go with some device, or, and had some sort of a game that was involved with it. Like, hey, learn Japanese, and it's like playing a Nintendo game. I don't know. Stuff like that could be pretty interesting if they do it right.
I totally agree with that. But of course,
if it happens, we totally called it.
Exactly. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Or the, put that out. And I definitely wonder how much money Nintendo is going to invest in this quality of life, because, we haven't heard anything about that either.
Yeah.
We know Nintendo's committed. They said they these kinds of things in their statements, but we're not sure what the level is. Like, how much resources are they going to take from their game development and put it into the quality of life development?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. I'm definitely more intrigued now that we've discussed it a little bit more. I'm always excited to see what Nintendo does next. I mean, that's, why would we cover Nintendo stuff if we weren't excited about, new stuff they're going to do? So.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah. So, and they always do something unexpected, and I think that's part of the fun and maybe sometimes not so fun, of covering Nintendo. Why some people hate it, why some people like it. I think the surprise is good and bad sometimes. But.
Mm-hmm. But that's another podcast discussion for another day, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Why we like Nintendo.
But anyway, I think that will do it for this week's podcast. Thank you very much, Justin, for coming on and talking to me about all these awesome subjects.
No problem. Thank you.
And if people have noticed, this is again podcast 49, which means podcast number 50. We'll be coming up in 2 weeks, and we want you all to stay tuned for that. We will have something to give away. We'll have a code to give away for podcast number 50, so you should stick around for that. In the meantime, if you have any questions for us, you can email us at podcast@purenintendo.com. We'll have it up on our site on the KoopaCast page. You can follow us on Twitter. We have our Twitter handles. We have our Twitter handles on our staff page on the Pure Nintendo website. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much it for ways to contact us. Or you can always check out the Q&A app that we have going on live during our podcasts. So again, until next time, we will see you all later.
See you guys.